Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Corbin kicks and deals, and that ball is lifted out into right field. Adolis on the move. He will not get there. It lands inside the line. Urshela scores. Rooker hits the bag at third. He's being waved home. The relay throw is not in time. Rooker scores from first on the double by Soderstrom just inside the right field line. The A's punch through and lead 2-0.
Hixie with a call on a game you heard right here. We are the home of Texas Rangers baseball. Did you know that, Bobby?
We are.
Yep, we are. They lose 2-1. The Bats not coming alive yet again, despite...
It's not your night.
It's... God. I forgot she's there, isn't she?
Still there.
We need some of her calls. We get some of those.
They're not good.
Stop it. She could be listening. The A's, I refuse to call them just the Athletics. They're Sacramento. Rangers lose 2-1. Patrick Corbin got into the fifth and didn't pitch all that terribly. I'll take it. You get Patrick Corbin into the fifth inning, allowing just 2 runs.
Wasn't great, but
wasn't
great.
I mean, he's not going to blow your doors off.
You just want him to battle. That's it.
You want him to eat up innings. Yep. Save, you don't want this to be a 6-inning bullpen day. Get me to the fifth.
I will say, I think you made this point yesterday, and I agree
good
with
one
it.
And I did.
Yeah, and I agree with it. It's so weird looking at Major League Baseball standings and seeing city and name city and then just Athletics. It's just weird.
It's so stupid. Just let them be Sacramento, man. Like, throw the town a bone.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be there anyway. I still don't believe they're going to Vegas.
I mean, who moves to Vegas first, the Mavericks or the A's? Very well, maybe the Mavs.
Is there a shovel in the dirt? That's all I want to know.
I mean, the city of Las Vegas has been... They've said some weird stuff about the A's throughout this process.
Yes.
Where the mayor and other people are just like, oh, but maybe we don't want them.
Yeah, I know they were like prepping the Tropicana to be torn down, and but I don't know that they've actually, I have not seen a report they started actually any construction, but that doesn't matter. But the Rangers, still, they just don't hit well. You know, the only, it's either 4 runs or nothing, basically.
Yeah,
there's no kind of in between.
It is your Texas Rangers that have scored the fewest total runs in Major League Baseball to this point. They have 87. They are one of 4 teams with fewer than 100 runs.
And they've played 30 games? 29 games?
29 games. They've scored 87 runs.
Do some math. That's less than three runs a game.
They're under 3 runs a game. Or no, they're right at 3 runs a game.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so
that's
pretty good, man.
Awful.
Nope.
It's awful.
That's a kick to the stomach for sure. All right, let's change gears a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, will the Cowboys score? Will their offense score? Clayton Adams is the new offensive coordinator for your Dallas Cowboys. Now, he's going to be the offensive coordinator in the same way that Brian Schottenheimer was the offensive coordinator the last few years. He's going to be part of game plans. He's going to be part of installing the offense. He's going to be a big part of designing the run game. A lot of the different concepts that they're going to do with the offensive line are going to be related to Clayton Adams, who was the offensive line coach in Arizona. But he spoke with the draft show here on 105 Through the Fan and DallasCowboys.com. So Wolchuk, Broadus, Nick Harris, Kyle Yeomans, Tommy Arsch, they were all got a chance to interview some coaches and some scouts on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. And when they got the chance to talk to Clayton Adams, I thought there was some interesting stuff in there just about the team building, but also how much is potentially going to change What is what's being tweaked about the offense? What's going to be adjusted? Is this going to be a shock to the system for Dak and a lot of the other players? You've referenced it before, the number of coaches Dak goes through at his position, or as coordinators he's gone through throughout his career. There's always something changing.
Which, by the way, that is it's a terrible thing for a quarterback to have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I also do believe it is a knock on the quarterback that there's constantly changeover within the offensive system at the coaching. And it's not like these guys are like getting promoted.
In general, sure.
If the next guy is constantly getting a head coaching job, that's a good thing for the quarterback. It just makes it more difficult for them.
In general, sure. I think when you look at the history of this one, it's like they clearly liked Kellen. They fast-tracked Kellen to replace people. Yeah. So that was some of the changeover you had. And then you had other instances where after a while it's like, well, now Kellen and Mike don't get along, so that's a bigger issue. Like, there's politics involved in a lot of this, too, that I think has been cause for the change. But this is the first clip here. This is Clayton Adams talking about their preference. How have they decided to attack the draft? How have they decided to attack team building?
Well, I mean, I think it's as high a priority as everything else is you want to build really deep rooms with good and tough players. And one of the things that I've been so impressed with the draft process here is, when there's things that happen, you kind of let it fall the way that it's falling. When the best player is there that's going to make our team the best, we're going to get the thing that we think is the sure thing more than just like, you know what, we really need this position. Let's reach a little bit. You know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of reaching in that draft room, and certainly no panic in that draft room. So it's been pretty impressive to watch.
I think he answered the question he had yesterday about how much of when you're picking somebody is about making sure they're not going to miss versus the upside or whatever else. Clayton Adams just told you there, like, they want the sure thing. They want the thing that they want the guy that we know this guy is going to improve our team.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sounds like to them, their priority is give me certainty. Give me certainty over question marks, especially for where this team is at right now. But also,
and we talked about this yesterday a little bit, and it's like, do you want, and I think it's position dependent.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some areas where you'd probably want upside over, like, I mean,
quarterback, they
like edge rushers, I think, a lot of times, who are just high upside players. They don't want necessarily just this is a steady player. But I get what Clayton Adams is saying in terms of, it sounds like a no-brainer philosophy when he says, we want to build deep rooms with tough players who are good. Like, well, yeah, of course you do. But what he's tying that to is, that's best player available that's not drafting on need. That's, even if it doesn't look like any, the best way to build that is by just saying, let me grab the player who makes our team the best.
Yeah.
And the player who makes our team the best may not be a wide receiver too, even though that's right. We really want one. It may not be, he may not help as much as the guard does. You may say guard's not a need, but that guard being in our lineup helps us more than leaving the current guard in there and then drafting whatever wide receiver two is on the board. So for us, it's a team building thing. And he actually got into it a little bit more because after he mentioned, hey, I think we're really about BPA here. He was asked as a follow-up, they asked Clayton Adams, what does it mean? Why is that the philosophy? Why is it that BPA is, in your belief, the way that the team is structured instead of really targeting needs?
Just being such a collaborative process up there, Mr. Jones, he really wants to listen to everybody's opinion and take them in. And at the end of the day, he's going to make a decision. He and Steven are going to make a decision on it. But Will McClay and the guys that work over in the personnel department, they turn over every single stone and they really value the input of the coaches as well. And so, one of the probably most impressive things about the entire process is just they understand that everything should be valued as a piece of the puzzle, not the entire thing. And so you evaluate things as they come up. And then when we're on the clock, there's options for a lot of different things. But it's, okay, who's the guy that's going to make our team the best? Not necessarily just going to be a Band-Aid to cover, a hole in the thing.
I think that's really important and revealing for their philosophy. Is that they're telling you that when people are saying, you should have got me a receiver, you should have got me, for instance, Booker. Let's just take Booker versus Matthew Golden, the receiver from Texas. I think what he's telling you there is, even if they liked Matthew Golden, Matthew Golden may have been more of a Band-Aid for the offense than something that was actually going to fix it. Whereas they think Tyler Booker fixes something.
All right. So I can understand that thinking. I don't have a problem with their philosophy with this year in the draft. I thought they did an okay job.
No, yeah.
They got 80% of their biggest needs, right? They looked at 80% of their need. They got about 80% of them. The only one they didn't get was wide receiver.
Yeah, and look, I mean, they're going to evaluate the wide receiver market like we talked about earlier. There's rumblings about Amari Cooper, Keenan Allen. There's been some chatter about Nelson Aguilar, Robert Woods. But again, those are aging players too. Those are all guys in their 30s. Would you rather, I mean, I know what you would rather do in this situation, what I'm about to say. Would you rather go get Jameson Williams? Would you rather sacrifice a second round pick next year and try and trade for Jameson Williams? Maybe that's the kind of solution, but then you got to pay him because he's entering the final year of his rookie deal.
And is Detroit thinking of trading him?
I forgot you were out. There was buzz last week that the Lions might have Jameson Williams on the block because they've started paying a bunch of guys, and they just drafted, I think they drafted two receivers in the draft this year. So the thought is that they're like, yeah, we're not going to be able to pay him. Let's try and move him for something.
I mean, he's electric.
I mean, Jameson Williams in this offense would be... That'd be a missing component.
A weapon. That's
not just a weapon, but that's a thing you are missing right now.
So, you know, you mentioned ceiling versus floor. I just kind of wrote this down. I think the high ceiling positions that I would look to draft: quarterback, wide receiver, edge.
Okay.
And I think every other position I would rather have, like, just give me a high floor safe guy. Like all the rest of the deal, like I want safe on defense. Corner, I want my fourth corner, like that's the weak link, right? Linebacker, safety, the rest of your defensive line. I want all my O-line to be high floor guys. You can't have misses there.
Yeah, and I feel with pretty good certainty that Tyler Booker's not going to be a miss. Like that is a high floor guy. Whereas Tyler Smith and Tyler Guyton, those were not sure things. Those were upside guys. Tyler Smith hit. Guyton has not yet. How much, you know, is Guyton's growing pains? Like how much are they really going to need to develop? I still believe in Tyler Guyton. I still think he's going to hit. But it's still more of a question. Now, we talk about changes to the offense. I thought this was a really great cut from Clayton Adams. I think it's really good perspective. When we talk about all the different changes of, man, somebody's going to come in here and they're going to, you know, put their different schemes and their different philosophies in here. Clayton Adams talked about how he needs to adapt more than the players need to.
Certainly, it's been a whirlwind for me. Just trying to really come into a system where the terminology isn't really going to change, which is the right thing to do, right? You want to protect the terminology for the players. Certainly, when you have a quarterback like Dak Prescott coming back, is why would we make him learn a whole bunch of new terminology when that can be my job to learn that? Mm-hmm. So that's one piece of it. Trying to blend, you know, where do we find nuance and things that we want to do a little bit differently than what we've done in the past. And then, you know, just Shadi and I getting on the exact same page, which he's really been amazing, and probably as good a situation as I could have walked into in terms of somebody who's, you know, this is a new role for me. And so being that the head coach is the person that was in my shoes just last year, you know, he's able to give me a lot of guidance and keep me ahead on things. So I'm not getting hit from the side on like, didn't think about that. Yeah. He's been great of just being ahead, 2 weeks ahead most of the time. Like, hey, this is coming up.
I think that's a fantastic approach to have. Yeah. Why make 53 guys, or I mean, on the offensive side, why make 25, 26 guys change what they know?
Right.
When I can just learn what they know.
Right, because, you know, as a player, you've got so much going on. Like, you have to play off instinct, but also know what you're doing.
Yeah. Look, so, I mean, so much.
Make it simple.
That's the argument of static versus exotic. When you're talking about disguising coverages or disguising things on offense, you know, Mike Zimmer came in and tried to disguise a lot of different things because that's his preference. Dan Quinn, who had done some disguising during his career in Seattle and also in Atlanta, he got here and he realized there's only so much they can handle. So I would rather just have them try to execute instead of have massive busts a few times a game because they didn't communicate the right way. Like, at that point, concealing what we're doing isn't a benefit if we're, you know, busting it as often.
I agree.
And I think that's a big thing there, is that the Cowboys recognize the best position for us to be in is where everybody's on the same page and we're not having communication issues.
I'm with you. Just keep it simple, man. They don't need to go out there and completely revamp the offense and change the terminology. You know, let Dak and company do what they know and make it easier for them. All right, that's Sean and RJ here, 105.3 The Fan. We got a commercial-free expressway heading your way next. Ask Reddit. We got a ticket giveaway. The media had a frenzy when it comes to Shador's coverage over the weekend. More tea spilled in the expressway next.
Driving the net, Rantanen. He's got it. Score! Against his own team, Rantanen for the first time in this series.
That is Bob Wischusa with the call on ESPN. The Stars, a 6-2 victor over Colorado. They take a 3-2 series lead. This was a game start to finish. 9 seconds in, they took a lead, and they never gave it up. They had a moment in the second period, a moment where I was like, eh, all right. Get a little testy here. Thought I might be able to go to bed early, but nope. And they end that period, two goals in a minute 44, and then they add an extra a goal in the third, an empty netter, and it was over.
Like, at least one of these teams can score more than 4 points, you know? Even if the Rangers can't put up more than... When was the...
Call it points in baseball.
I know, but I can't call it... I can't say at least somebody can put up more than 4 runs when I'm talking about the Stars. So I had to call it points. That's why. I know it's called runs, but I got to look here.
I'm giving you a little grief.
I got to see, how long do you think it's been since... How many games has it taken? Probably, what, 4? Let's see.
Last week, I think.
And the Rangers scored 6 or more?
Over the last 4 games, they've scored 5 combined. The Rangers have.
Yikes.
Brutal.
Yikes. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. But you know, for the Stars, though, not a tough one. That was a dominant victory.
Nope.
And now they get to go back to Colorado for a game 6 where they can wrap it up. And they would get the winner of Winnipeg-St. Louis. That series is tied at 2. They play tonight.
Yeah.
So they may be able to get a little bit of rest.
But they'll earn it. If the Stars do win a cup this year, they're going to earn it with their playoff path.
Yeah. You have to go through Colorado and then maybe Winnipeg. And then on the other side, you're going to have Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, this is gonna Edmonton. This will be a tough trek for them for sure.
Yeah, Florida won. They're up 3-1 in the East over Tampa, and you know they're looking to get back to another Stanley Cup final. This is going to be an interesting run. So, Stars win 6-2. They can wrap it up tomorrow night. Let's do this now. Let's hook you up, Tolos.
All right, Tolos, that's right. Call on number 10 right now at 877-881-1053 wins a 4-pack of tickets to see the Arlington Renegades when they take on the Michigan Panthers Saturday, May 10th at Choctaw Stadium in Arlington. That's call on number 10 at 877-881-1053.
Ask Reddit coming up at 740, maybe a little bit before, who knows? But it is the commercial-free expressway here on 105.3 The Fan. So we didn't get into this yesterday. We talked a little bit about Shador yesterday, but we didn't get into the media frenzy that took place over the weekend. All the commentary that was going on, Mel Kiper, and then, you know, yesterday it continued on these shows, these morning shows and afternoon shows and all the TV, you know, hot take shows about the conversation that took place over the weekend. That was the focus.
Yeah. And look, I mean, so we were on draft coverage, so I wasn't able to watch it live, but I was picking up more than enough through social media to see this. Mel Kiper was having an active meltdown, which I still, we'll play his audio here in a second. We'll talk about some of the angles. I think a lot of what this is about is he looked embarrassed that he had so definitively said, nope, he's going to go there. He's going to be in the top 3, and he's this high on my board. And then I think it just, when it kept plummeting, he had to turn it around on other people because it makes it look like, here's the reality. Mel Kiper does not watch tape like he used to. Mel Kiper talks to people, gathers his opinions, and that's what he puts out. So Mel's not like doing a whole bunch of grinding study like Dane Brugler or Trevor Sikkema or anybody else that we talked to during the draft process. He is in large part just cultivating what he hears. And I think a lot of people know that. So I think what's frustrating to him is that if the whole league agrees he's not a first-round player, well, then who's talking to you? How did he end up third on your board or second on your board, right, Mel?
Yeah, it's... look, I hate the... And I feel this is... There's a movement to try to discredit Mel by the younger crowd. And it's just like, you know, you have a job literally because of him. bow down.
Sure. There's
That's why I take it. Like, I hate that. In radio, right? It's like there are people that came before us that don't do radio the same way we do it now, but we don't need to crap on them.
Yeah.
And we do. We don't. It's like we have a job because of them. Like just shut your mouth.
Sure. And
bow down.
And I think most people do feel that way about Mel, that he's an innovator and he did things. He created an entire industry. He did, honestly. Yeah. Like if you want to talk about broadcast Hall of Fames or whatever else, yeah, Mel deserves to go in.
Listen, they're going to treat Mel, and they should, like Lee Corso, and they let him walk away when he wants to. And that's what they should do.
Well, and so here's the
because
thing.
They have a show because of him.
Mel used to obsessively like dive into all of it. I think it's just you slow down and
you know, less than that. Happens.
It's also just you start realizing like who you need to talk to, the relationship you develop, and that becomes more the focus. Whereas a lot of other people, I think today, there's a lot of people who just do the research, they just do the study. Then there's people who just talk to sources, just talk to teams. And then you've got people like Dane, for instance, who he does all the research and then he's also talking to the teams and his work is reflected as a collaborative thing.
So Albert Breer had this. Well, here, let's do the Mel stuff first because I was going to try to tie it in, but we'll do the Mel stuff. This is his rant on Shador, and this was kind of like, it was him and Lou Riddick and Reese.
Yeah. Merrill Reese.
Not Merrill Reese.
No, Reese Davis.
That kind of went at it together.
Now, pocket passers, old school traditional pocket passers, have to prove themselves to the NFL. The NFL doesn't go crazy over those kind of guys. They really haven't. They jumped at the opportunity to take those quarterbacks. Peyton Manning, people were debating Ryan Leaf. Phil Polian took him. They said, I had calls, people saying, well, he should be a third-round pick. This was Peyton Manning. So Shador Sanders, I got the same thing. I fought it, but I had to fight it a lot, right? With the calls coming and say, no, he's not that. Since he's not 6'3", 230, doesn't have the rocket arm, doesn't run 4'6". You can't change that. But to have a quarterback with the kind of ability he shows, under duress, accurate, decision-maker, tough, this to me is about what I think they perceive as, you talk about cocky or confident, arrogant or charismatic, okay? Leadership. There's not going to be a show. There's not going to be a circus with Shador Sanders. Deion Sanders was one of the hardest working players in the history of this game. He brought with him a great work ethic. He was loved in every locker room. Atlanta Braves clubhouse, by the way. Shador Sanders will be the same thing. He will galvanize. And whatever perception's out there, I don't know what people are thinking is going to happen when Shador Sanders is brought to your football team, except he's going to work. He's going to have all those players going to rally around him. He's going to be a hell of a quarterback in this league, and he will cause a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of anguish for the teams that pass him.
I like Shador. I think Shador has great upside. He can't act like that's not a concern, though.
With the work ethic?
Not the work ethic. The stuff about just the demeanor and what's going on between the ears.
Right.
And the way that he approaches when that's a miss. Look, when the way he dealt with some of the teams at the combine was bad. And we've heard the reports about it and different things like that. But did you see the Peter Schrager quote from that was circulating after Shador started to fall? Schrager had been on with Bill Simmons, as he's known to do. And this is about 3 weeks ago, something like that. And basically the quote was something to the effect of, you know, I wonder, there's so much chatter in NFL circles about where Shador's going to go, and teams don't have him in the first. They don't. They say he's a second-round player. Some think he's a third-round player. Like, that's just the case. And he said, I wonder if there's any effect of people who have been in the media for so long who have all worked with Deion, who like Deion and are friends with Deion and don't want to offend. And that there's a little bit of and Mel right there clearly sounds like a Deion fan.
Right.
That I wonder if it is just you also don't want to get in the crosshairs of Deion and start talking about your kid's a third round player and then Deion starts lighting you up.
Right. This is from Albert Breer. He said that he wrote this on Tuesday of last week. He said it wasn't easy to find coaches or scouts who viewed the Colorado quarterback as a first round talent coming into the draft. Not a great athlete. Not great arm strength, bad habits and taking unnecessary sacks, bailing out of the pocket. He had trouble playing on time in general, did things off schedule that weren't going to translate to the NFL. And then you have some issues within the interview process that rubbed people the wrong way.
Yeah, look, I mean, let's be honest. Do you think I talk to more people than Mel Kiper does? Or I have, do you think I have more higher up decision makers in my contacts than Mel Kiper does? No, I don't. That. And yet, how long did I tell you guys this was the case?
Right.
Back to early January and then through the combine? Like, yeah, this is kind of his reputation. And teams are not. That's what the whole fight with Will was about. At the bar was about him saying, well, he's been the number one pick for 2 years. It's like, no, he hasn't. Teams have viewed him as like a second who could ascend or a late first who could ascend, depending on how he played his last year. The reality has always been this. And that's the thing that I find so fascinating is that Mel's got to know that. Mel had to hear everything that everybody else heard. Because, I mean, I certainly heard it from enough people to know exactly how the league viewed him.
Right.
And so I know Mel has. So what was Mel just that convicted? Or is there something else here that we're not being exposed to about Mel's interests? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. But I know Mel, and this is another one. He did talk about how and I agree with Mel here on this case. The NFL doesn't know what they're doing when it comes to quarterbacks.
The NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks. Clueless. All they have no idea what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterbacks. That's proof. There's proof of that.
When they say
we know exactly what we're talking about with quarterbacks, they don't.
Look, I agree. I don't think quarterbacks have been evaluated properly. I don't think this is a referendum on sure door the player. With it when it comes to the evaluation of the quarterback position, to me, anybody who takes too many sacks is not an NFL quarterback, and he does. He takes too many sacks. But I also think the NFL is obsessed with finding Josh Allen, right? They're obsessed with strength, power. All teams are in all sports. They're obsessed with it. And in doing so, they undervalue, I believe, more important attributes. They look at arm strength. I think they need to look at timing. Give me an on-time play. You only need a cannon if you're late. If you're on time, you don't need a cannon.
Yeah, I think we're talking about...
Now, when things break down, that's when you need the cannon, right? But if you're just on time in general, you don't need it.
I mean, if you're running a West Coast system, sure. Because it's timing and it's rhythm, and you're working in the short and intermediate areas. But I mean, yeah, you're going to need an arm to be able to get the ball. Anything that you're throwing in the deeper intermediate parts of the field, you're going to need to because
you can't have a noodle. I'm just saying, you can't have a noodle. You can't have Chad Pennington.
I mean, yeah, anything to the sideline, anything deep crossers, you're generally going to need to have an arm.
But you don't need to have Josh Allen's arm out there to make
right. You don't have to have Josh Allen's arm, but I don't think anybody's demanding Josh Allen's arm. They don't want Craig Krenzel, and not that Shador Sanders is Craig Krenzel, but
right. Yeah, I get it. You can't have something on the way back end. You can't have a terrible. Let's see who had the worst. You can't have Johnny Damon out there. You can't have this arm where he couldn't make a throw. They look at throws outside the numbers. I think they need to look deep middle. I think those are the better throws.
I think a lot of teams do look at the middle of the field. Outside the numbers is definitely an important part of it, but I think middle of the field throws are important. That's why J.J. McCarthy was so high up on it for a lot of people, because he throws so effectively to the middle.
They look at accuracy. Either they need to look at aggressiveness. I embrace interceptions. Attack them.
How do you tie those together, though? That you don't need you're fine with just the rhythm and the timing and not worried nearly as much about the arm strength, but then you don't want them to prioritize accuracy. You'd rather have aggressiveness.
All right. So let me say it like this. I don't want them to be scared. I don't want a quarterback scared of throwing interceptions.
Sure.
They're going to happen. Embrace it. Just be aggressive.
I think that comes
that
with...
That doesn't mean be Jameis.
I think that comes with the player, though, more than it does any coaching staff or anything. I think most players are risk averse early on.
Yeah.
Or
backup quarterbacks are risk averse. That's why they're backups.
Yeah, they're coached that way too a lot of times. But right. I mean, it's also like, I think young players are typically risk averse, but they also don't know what they don't know, and mm-hmm. they don't understand when they're taking risks sometimes and will make stupid throws. And so, because you see a lot of young quarterbacks turn the ball over a lot, and I think they are trying not to. They're trying to play safe football, and that's how complex these defensive schemes are and how difficult it is to operate against them. I think that's why mental processing is such a big thing for guys. The problem with Shador that you see on tape a lot is, like you say, he'll take the snap. They mentioned there, not only does he take sacks, that man is going back. These are 17, 20-yard sacks.
Yeah, you can't do that, man.
He doesn't keep his eyes downfield. I like him. He was my number one quarterback. I had him in the second round. I think he's got really intriguing upside. I think the way he throws with touch and anticipation and some of the things he does is really impressive. I think he's got...
Who starts week one for Cleveland?
Pickett? I have no idea. I mean, they've got four options.
They do.
Or five. I think they have another veteran behind there. It's Pickett, Watson, Gabriel, Sanders, Flacco. And then, Flacco. So,
good
I don't know.
Gosh.
Flip a coin.
Good.
Flip five
coins. That's a hell of a room. My goodness. Kyle Brandt. You like Kyle Brandt?
I think Kyle's talented.
I like Kyle. I think Kyle. Did Kyle Brandt just discover the internet? This was his commentary yesterday on this.
Over the weekends, this went from a football story to a drunken media story. It became one of these seismic media rodeos where you can sit there and watch people that you've followed for years say things that you know they don't believe. Or at best, they were saying from some emotional place where they were so unhinged and off the reservation. I mean, I'm hearing things like conspiracy, collusion. What are you talking about? Do you know that video of you saying that to your phone? You know it's going out to the public, right? Aren't you embarrassed? Or are you just that happy to see the engagement being churned out by people clicking on the video of a circus clown screaming conspiracy theories? Do you not think that if one team thought Shador Sanders would help them win one more game than the other guy, that they wouldn't immediately draft him? They would. I promise you. These coaches, these GMs are obsessed, desperate, nomadic people who just want to win games and not move their families to another city after they're fired.
I don't disagree completely. But I'll say this. There's a little bit of irony in him talking about the engagement and everything else, when clearly that's the thrust of what he's doing there.
60% of the internet is people saying things they don't believe.
Sure. I say things I don't believe all the time just to troll people.
I know.
Just to stick in the craw.
How do you think these shows exist? It's people saying things they don't believe, including on the one you're on.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, that sounds like you're trying to get your engagement as well. So, I mean, there's an irony that... Here's the point I think he made that's right, though. When he says, you don't think if somebody saw Shador and thought, that dude's a baller, like, you think they were just trying to stick to it? They were willing to pass on somebody who could make a difference for their job. The Charles Robinson had the best tweet about this on day three. He said, Tom Brady knows Dion. Brady mentored Shador. Brady is advising the Raiders on the quarterback spot. They've passed on Shador 8 times so far with 6 picks and 2 trade downs. There's zero chance Brady and the Raiders are wielding a Sanders grudge. Zero. And yet they're passing. And I think that's the example. The Raiders are the best example to look at of... The league just didn't like him very much. I think most in the league thought he should have gone in the second or third round. The fact that he waited till day three was probably a lot. There were a lot of teams, I think, that were put off by the demeanor and some of the things he said. And they said, I think a lot of folks, I talked to people who said they thought that he essentially needed to work on things and they didn't believe he had the humility to work on them.
Interesting discussion. It is the commercial-free expressway. This portion of the expressway is driven by Mercedes-Benz of Plano. Time for my favorite segment of the week and Brian Broaddus's to Ask Reddit.
Do you have a question, Kelly?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
877.
That's a microphone.
881-1053. 877-881-1053. That is the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorneys Fantex, where we will do Ask Reddit here like we do every Tuesday at 7:40. You can weigh in on the questions we're asking here. These are the most viral questions from Ask Reddit over the last week. So we want to hear from you on the YouTube. So I'm looking in there right now. Kid Cowboy, Lil Dallas Cowboy, Carrie. We got all you guys in there. And then on the Twitch, Arcada, Mike X Cowboy, the Sethnicity, who I met the Sethnicity at Draft 101.
Well,
yeah, it was good to say hey to him. So, all right, we're doing Ask Reddit here on 105 Through the Fan. Peyton Russell, we'll lead off with you. What is a sentence that instantly causes panic or anxiety?
It's the obvious one. We need to talk. Anytime a girlfriend, wife, you know, ex, whatever, you know, sent you that, you start panicking. You think, okay, what did I do? What do we need to talk about? There's never a good reason for it. No one ever says we need to talk just so they can talk to you on the phone. It's, hey, we need to talk. Or when the bosses say, hey, come see me in my office after the show. That always scares me as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like for you is... Come see me in my office. That's definitely panic inducing, but don't you feel like if they're really mad, they're just going to say it to you right there in that studio?
See, well,
they've done that before.
Well, you know, maybe, but no, I don't know. If it needs to be private, it's private. But I mean, the last few times I've gotten the text, it's never been anything bad, you know, so I don't know why I panic all the time, but I just assume the worst when I get texts like that.
Chop, the what sentence instantly causes panic or anxiety?
Peyton's right. It's got a minute. It's,
I'm late. That's bad too.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Unless you're expecting, I mean, unless you want one, then I guess. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it all depends on where you are in life too. Like, you know, if you're a single guy, the can we talk? Not a single guy, but like, if you're like in a new relationship, the can we talk? That one does it. But you know, for like. So if you're married, if it's in a good relationship, I think a lot of it goes to work, which is the got a minute.
Yeah, got a minute.
Come by my office.
The very first one that came to my mind was we need to talk. And I think universally that's just the one everybody goes like, oh, crap, what is it? Some of the answers here on the Frankel & Frankel Injury Attorneys Fan Text. 214, you're going to want to sit down.
Oh, yeah.
817, I need to tell you something. 817, your card has been declined.
214 says we're out of beer. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Your car's been declined. Yeah.
469, when I see a message notification from my kid's school. That's not a phrase, but yeah, when you see it pop up, you're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. So like anytime, you know, we'll get these. So a lot of times it's like, it's just, hey, here, notes about the progress reports are out or the grades are out. But then it's the school's on lockdown. That will do it.
This isn't a phrase. Arcada brings up a good one though. When you see a missed call from someone who never calls you.
Yeah.
Like that gets me, I'll tell you right now, I get panic every time I see my dad's calling. My dad calls me, but usually like if he calls and it's depending on when it is during the day or the week, I'm like, oh gosh, what is this? Does somebody die and a family member died?
Yeah. Did you ever have that intuition? Like you see a text notification come through. And it's from somebody that, you know, you talk to a lot, but you just have a feeling that it's something bad without even seeing the text.
Yeah.
It's weird how that happens.
I feel like if Sean is texting me separate from the group text, it's something bad. When I see a notification just from Sean, I'm like, oh, great. What is this? What happened? He's having another baby. Am I getting invited to Ava's graduation from college? Whatever it is. Over on the YouTube, good answer here. Pick and Pop, your full name.
Yeah, that's a good one.
When you hear your full name, that's panic inducing. All right, we're doing Ask Reddit here on 105 Through the Fan. RJ Choppy, what's something that makes sense to most men but not to you?
I don't understand this one.
Okay, then I'll answer first. I'll give you an example. Yeah. Something that makes going to the strip club. I don't understand the thought. Like, I don't understand at all the benefit. And, like, you're going to blow a bunch of money. It's not like... In theory, you're able to do anything about it, you know, to be vague. Mm-hmm. To me, I've never understood. Like, all right, if you'd like to see that, you can. There are much more cost efficient ways to do so.
Just the experience, you know, just being there in person.
Right. Yeah. That's an experience. I don't get fishing.
Like how people get duped.
No, that's catfishing.
See, that's our... No, I was thinking pH. Yeah. Like you're fishing and you're with like
I know fishing makes a lot sense to a lot of men.
Brian Broaddus is going to come for you, man.
I don't get it. Like, hunting, I've got no problem. Like, it's not like I have a problem with either one of them. To me, it's just, like, I don't want to sit there and wait on a fish to bite. It's just, to me, it's just very
There's
boring.
Nothing cathartic about it. I'm not here.
No. To me, that's lawn mowing. I get catharsism. Catharsism, is that right?
Sure.
I get peace for mowing my lawn.
Now, do you view fishing as I'm just randomly tossing it here and waiting for something to bite? Or do you, because
yeah, I'm not smart enough to know the science.
I was gonna say
it,
most
right?
people who fish view it as strategy, or I'm gonna go up.
You go to Lake Fork,
it's a sport,
and you find the shallow end and you look for the wood or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I just to me, I don't get it.
Peyton, what's your answer to this?
It's a question I got. Why gas lawn mowers are better than electric? I mean, I have an electric one, but it's like any guy I talk to is like, no, you got to get gas. Is better. Oh, yeah. No, why?
Why?
Yeah.
Testosterone.
Okay, well.
More powerful. So, like, for example, like, do
but
you...
But that's it, right? Like there's no benefit to it. It's just, oh, gas is how it's always been.
I bet you I don't know for a fact. I assume that it's more powerful and it will stop clogging, you know, if you go over thick, high grass.
Oh.
That's my guess.
DFW Dad on the Twitch says bottle service. Never
makes
sense.
I don't get bottle service either. It doesn't make any sense to me.
We got some good answers on the fan text. 214, having a man cut your hair doesn't make sense to me. Just let a woman run her hands through my hair. 760, sports gambling. If you want action, put it in the market. And if you lose, it's a write-off. How would you explain sports gambling then to the 760? Boy, Sean, while you've been out, he's starting to get hooked, man. He's loving the
underdog.
Yeah, he's loving it.
Well, I mean, it is a write-off if you lose, but you can only write off up to your – you could write off your losses up to your winnings or something like that. And I'm not smart enough to know how to do that. Sports gambling just puts a fun aspect to the game. You watch a game you normally wouldn't watch. That's the way I look at it.
214, getting blackout drunk. 469, wrestling. All right, we're doing Ask Reddit here on 105 through the Fan. Peyton Russell, what goes on in a guy's head when he really likes a girl?
I mean, the obvious one is, you know, thinking of sleeping with her, but I guess I think we all have that answer.
You don't even need to like her.
I think it's more, not like when you see attractive, it's like when you are falling for a girl. What's going through a guy's head?
I'll tell you what, everything wrong, every wrong move is going through your head.
Yeah.
When you haven't like figured out that you like her yet, your demeanor's different, you interact with her differently, and then the moment you're like, oh crap, I like this girl, you start texting her too often.
Yep.
You start wanting to hang out too much. You outthink the room.
Nerves.
You play with your own mind. Oh, the worst thing you could do to maintain a long-term relationship is like start to like her before it's set in stone, you're Facebook official.
I mean, it really is. People use the analogy of butterflies in the stomach because it really is that sort of, it's a sensation of just like there's a fluttering or an unease, like, oh my gosh, like
you make every wrong move.
I'm about to see her. I don't want to screw this up. I don't want this to go wrong. Or like you start overthinking everything.
You start thinking of like conversations. Okay, what can I bring up?
Right.
And it's like, well, that was a stupid question. You know, you start getting like the note card questions out and like, all right, if it gets awkward, I can talk about this and
note
this.
Cards.
And
you bring...
No, no.
Three
it's
by
just
fives?
Figure speech.
Do you carry 3x5s around with you and McKenzie still?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I think
awkward silence. What's your favorite dinner?
I think you interpret.
You try to interpret everything.
Every text.
You mess with your own mind.
Yeah, you start behaving in a way that if it's your first time, like really falling for somebody, you start behaving in a way that you never thought possible before. Like you really do feel almost out of control. Is what it's. That's probably the best way to put it. You feel completely out of control of your decisions and your thought process. All right, we're doing Ask Reddit here on 105 through the Fan. RJ Choppy, what's the dumbest reason someone became famous in the U.S.?
Having sex with Ray J.
If you're listening out there, Gavin Spittle, I tried picking three in a row that they just naturally, I guess, went this direction with the answers that were.
You did that on purpose.
Last week, I had three different questions that were a little adult, and he was like, not so many adult questions, please. He's like, all right, I'll tailor it a little, and then like we're still spitting out adult answers. But I'll tell you, one of the answers I saw on Reddit, Balloon Boy.
Balloon Boy.
The boy who, the hoax where they said the boy had like gotten stuck in the little weather balloon and he'd flown off and the parents lied about it. You remember him? Like 12 years ago. His name was Falcon Heen. But I'd say, yeah, generally anything, anybody going famous for, you know what? Hawk to a girl.
Dumb.
She was funny. It was a funny clip. She should not have taken over.
She was
like she did.
A kind of a cutish down home girl that had a funny clip, and then the moment they brought her up was it Zach Bryan brought up on stage, and she just yells "Hawk to" to the crowd, and I was like, "That's nope. We're done. That's all you have."
We are getting a ton of answers here. You got TikTok dances from the 903, 763, and 972 both say Bad Baby. Catch Me Outside, how about that?
Oh, yeah.
469, yelling on a talk show. 682, because I'm an island boy.
Oh, man, those guys, the island boys.
Peyton, what's
that
your
was my that was my ringtone to wake up to for like a year straight.
It's this guy right here, and I never thought he was funny, and I still don't get the reason why he got famous.
Oh god!
The Walmart kid that, yeah. And he's like 22 now or something. Like,
is he really?
He's old now. He's old, but this guy just singing. Someone had to have their phone there, record him, and I don't know what words he's saying. I don't get it.
The yodeler man. He's the yodeling kiddo.
EJL Viking says Hawk to a girl, and Poka Woka on the Twitch says that little Tay girl. Yeah, little Tay. I mean, little Tay kind of made me laugh for a little bit. She was the one who would.
Yeah.
I'm 9 years old. I got bands, bro. Like that girl.
You see her with Jake Paul back in the early days?
Oh, yeah.
Jake didn't even look the same.
No. Oh, gosh. Jake's changed so much. All right. We got time for maybe one or two more here. Ask Reddit on 105.3 The Fan. You can text in your answers, 877-881-1053. 877-881-1053. RJ Choppy, I think this is a great question for you. I feel like you're going to have a take on this. Do you believe it's still important to give a firm handshake when meeting someone for the first time, or is this an outdated custom of the past?
I think a lot of it depends on the social situation that you're in. Like, if you meet someone for the first time and they give you, like, a bro hug, which that happens, I mean, I don't think it's very important. But anything work-related, absolutely. Anything remotely professional-related, absolutely. Like, there's nothing... It's just you give me like an icky handshake. But also I'll tell you where it is outdated. A lot of times, like, I will meet people, and if you meet like a ton of people at one time, you're going to a party and, you know, you just meet a bunch of people, like, how many times do you just fist pump instead of shaking hands to avoid like germs? A lot of people are germ obsessed. The moment they shake somebody's hand, they've got to go wash their hands.
Yeah.
Or use hand. And I think it's rude to just, I'm going to shake your hand, then bust out the hand sanitizer right in front of you.
Jesse Holly's a fist bump guy. Howie Mandel, famously a fist bump guy.
Well, he's an elbow guy now.
Oh, is he elbow now?
But it's an air elbow. He doesn't even touch elbows.
Come on, dude. That needs psychological research or something.
But Peyton, I think, yes, in general, in a professional situation, it's absolutely a must still.
Yeah, I agree. And I still do 100%, I will say, even though... Like, I mean, I'm fine with the fist bump. I don't think of it, but if I do shake your hand and it is weak, I do kind of go, what is that? Like, it does give me an uneasy feeling. I can't explain it. Peyton, what's your answer to this?
Yes. Yeah, I do feel it's so important. Yeah, if the guy is bigger than me, I feel like I have to go in strong.
Yeah, you've really got to kind of show
you. You got to out handshake his handshake. But I think COVID screwed it up really with the fist bump thing. Yeah. Like, you know, because I mean, the last five, six years, we've seen more fist bumps than we've ever had.
Agree.
Real quick, some of the answers as we wrap up. 870, Carlos in Fort Worth said COVID changed handshaking. 940 says you have to have a firm handshake after finishing a golf round with randoms.
The sweaty handshake post-golf round is the worst.
Over on the YouTube, Cowboys 1977 says anyone that gives me a limp handshake, I never trust. And Big Nasty 090709 on the Twitch says agreed. I feel like it's a respect thing.
You know, you really want to get down to it when you shake someone's hand, just take your hat off.
Why?
That's the ultimate respect, man. Take your hat off to shake their hand.
Oh, yeah. Like, But I also feel like if I'm taking my hat off and, like, putting it in my chest, I feel like I'm about to say, please, sir, can I have some more?
There's Ask Reddit here on 105 Through the Fan, commercial-free expressway brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Plano. Did this Longhorn make a huge mistake? And finally, the worst people in college sports have come to their senses. It is the College Football Kegger next on The Fan.